Before we enter back into the text, the parting from the four clings, I just want to recount that last weekend I was in Adelaide. We were given the opportunity to gather together with a large number of students. I think in total there were about 250 of us, of which included about 25 monks and nuns, as well as six geshis. So we all gathered together to engage in this Guru Bumsok, this practice of making 100,000 offerings to Guru Mbashe. And this was it's an annual event that's requested to create virtue to dedicate to the long lives of His Holiness and Lama Zopa, that they may continue to abide in our world and benefit beings. And that, and we also made prayers for the accomplishment of outer peace within the world as well as inner peace within beings, as well as to dedication of virtue for all the suffering that is being endured in Australia due to the current wave of bushfires, with so many beings dying awful deaths, as well as people losing their homes. So the puja was of great benefit, I feel, and it was really wonderful to gather together with so many fellow Dharma practitioners. And also I enjoyed the opportunity to be able to spend time with some of my classmates and others that I know from my monastery. So it was quite a very beneficial long weekend that we had in Adelaide. And a few of us went from here, some students, one of the monks, as well as some of the nuns. So it was wonderful to be there with my fellow Dharma practitioners from here too. We were also asked to, in the Dharma Center, to perform some debate so as to create auspiciousness for the students there so they could witness or observe debate. So as geshis, we all debated together, and this we find, of course, I found very enjoyable. So we did this in the Dharma Center, but between ourselves in our own time, we debated many times about a wide variety of topics. Afterwards, the photographs were posted to Facebook, and many were sent to Lama Zopa directly. And he expressed his great delight at the success of the Guru Bumsok, because this is something too that's very close to his heart, and he had encouraged Geshe Tenzin Zopa to arrange. And therefore, by us engaging in this puja last week, in this extensive puja, this bringing great delight to Lama Zopa's mind means that we were accomplishing the wishes of the teacher. We're fulfilling his hopes and his wishes. So this too is something that is to be rejoiced in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, turning back to the text, the root text is included in our commentary in the third verse. If you cling to this life, you're not a practitioner. If you cling to the three realms, that is not renunciation. If you cling to self-interest, you're not a bodhisattva. If grasping arises, it is not the view. To recap then, the meaning behind the first line, if you cling to this life, you are not a practitioner. We looked at this in some detail over a couple of weekends. But in brief, clinging to this life means having a mind that's dominated by achieving happiness that is related only to this one life, so mere worldly happiness, as well as the partner thought to that, which is a mind being dominated by overcoming the problems and difficulties that pertain to this life. So this very narrow way of thinking, this is what needs to be abandoned, because this is the way of thinking that clings to this mere life, this one life. In order then to develop a mind that is far broader and more expansive than a mind that is obsessed by worldly happiness and overcoming worldly problems and difficulties, one needs to reflect on the sufferings of the lower realms, the preciousness of this rebirth, the impermanence of this life. So these are what one needs to reflect on in order to give rise to a mind that is transformed, or to transform one's mind. And then when one has given rise to this transformation, then one strives in the cultivation of the practices that are the practices in order to achieve a good rebirth in our next life, those of ethics, generosity, patience, joy, perseverance, and prayer. And prayer here specifically refers to making aspirational prayers that in all our future rebirths, having attained a precious human rebirth, we meet a Mahayana spiritual friend, we recognize them as such, come under their care, and have great interest in the Dharma, train in the Dharma, cultivate the minds of the Dharma, cultivate the teachings of the spiritual friend in our continuum. So that's the prayers that one makes. So to represent them, represent what is meant here by abandoning clinging to this life in order to be a practitioner, is one first, well, in order to generate the required motivation, which is a motivation that is fixed on achieving a good rebirth, one needs to cultivate the preciousness of this opportunity that we have, come to understand clearly its great meaning, so that we don't let a moment go to waste. That then leads us to the reflection on the impermanence of this opportunity. And the reflection on the impermanence of that opportunity gives our mind great strength and great courage to turn away from the distractions of this life, the mere happiness, the achievement of mere happiness, and the overcoming of problems and difficulties that relate to just this one life. Then one thinks about, at the time of death, I have only one of two directions, the suffering lower realms or a pleasant migration as a human or God. And reflecting then on the suffering lower realms, one's strength of mind grows ever more determined. I have to use this precious human rebirth whilst I still have this opportunity before my life ends, so as to create the causes for a good rebirth. So this is how those three meditations on this human rebirth, its impermanence and the sufferings of the lower realms, give great strength and focus to one's mind. So then one has the motivation to engage in the trainings of those five practices of ethics, generosity, patience, joyous perseverance, and stainless prayer. So that's how to cultivate the motivation, what the motivation is, and then the practices of a practitioner. Thereafter, in our time together, we spent a weekend looking at the second line. If you cling to the three realms, that is not renunciation. The three realms then refers to the realm that we are in right now, that of the desire realm, as well as the realms of the form realm and the formless realms. So these three, the desire realm, form realm, and formless realm, comprise the three realms. The position that us ordinary beings find ourselves in is we cling to these three realms, and we cling to these three realms because we are deceived by our attachments, seeing there as being benefit, as being happiness within these three realms. And therefore, seeing the three realms as having desirable qualities, we are attached, or we cling to the three realms. And therefore, we have not been able to renounce these three realms. So the second clinging that needs to be separated or parted from is the clinging to these three realms. And the way to do that is come to realize with great clarity that there is no happiness worthy of striving for and achieving to be found anywhere within these three realms. And the way to come to a realization of a magnitude that is transformative is to reflect on suffering in great detail, and the different ways that different presentations on how one can do so. And here we looked at the threefold presentation on suffering. which starts with looking at the suffering of physical and mental pain. We spoke then also in some detail about the suffering of transient happiness. And then thirdly, the suffering, or pervasive suffering. So one needs to meditate repeatedly over a sustained period on all three of these, to the point where we see that cyclic existence is pervaded by suffering. And then that leads to our desire relating to samsara being severed. We no longer see any rebirth or any attainment within samsara as being worthy of endeavor and effort, but rather we develop a wish to be freed from the sufferings of samsara because we've understood the pervasive nature of suffering in samsara. And this leads us to developing the mind that is definite about emerging from the suffering realms of samsara and attaining liberation. Or to express it as we have here in the verse, to renounce the sufferings of samsara. To give rise to such a strength of mind requires extensive meditation on these three types of suffering. This has to be done, though, in order to generate the cause that leads to the result of the mind of definite emergence. And that is the mind that has sufficient strength that the practitioner can apply herself to cultivating and achieving liberation. Having generated the motivation through this reflection, then the practitioner is ready to engage in the actual practices of such a practitioner. And these are the same four practices related to the first line, namely those of ethics, generosity, patience, and joyous perseverance, and then two more added, concentration and wisdom. So these are the six trainings that are required in order to achieve liberation. But in order to be able to cultivate those trainings of sufficient strength or magnitude so that one actually achieves liberation, one requires a strong aspiration to be freed from suffering. To generate this aspiration requires that the reflection on suffering. And the stronger the resulting aspiration for freedom, the stronger one will strive for liberation, which means one's mind will be ever focused on achieving liberation. So this is a sequence of trainings relating to the abandoning, the clinging to the three realms, or to samsara in its entirety.
先要我对的，什么时候？啊，你怕住不要紧，俺这里啊，先有等到俺家这些那个来看这些呢，俺叫我抢他，刚刚刚才前面什么，第二个什么当官过来，第一个没有的，俺那俺这个第一阶段的，先讲他们这第一主播，中央主播在你前后头，什么什么当一段，第二三个什么叫他们就上去过，王马头那他们都什么，讲究什么，你们这些的吃过来，我们要提的，接着第二张，先接着什么，其实讲究什么，我们参加的什么讲。
他们这个三月国王托把钱，三月三月，今年的江西省接来了，第几个等到了，我们就先读嘛，招呼的三八的，先接三八，国庙的军政地的，江西省接一个等到了，先接这个三八的公布过来。其实，今年江西省接呢，到三月他们三月国王托把钱好多，三月七托把少，三月江西省接呢，一共下来，但是人们个接的，搞来了呢，几个嘞，金巴、翠竹、三八、钻竹、三天、西拉、东玉都被西拉。
我的娘们接的，你妈的娘们知道，几个人呢？工农了，咔咔咔，差不多了，就是工农一千把吨的多，就是江西三江他们这个都三九国宝托把几，三百工农江西三百把差不多了，给那个舅妈买一把，就是那江西三把。但那个娘们接的工农的那些娘们接三九国宝托把一吨到了，娘们赶紧托过来是呢，进步进手派进去给的娘们接的，就是娘们接的了，现在看上金阿这个开心的去上街。
Overcoming that first clinging, it was presented then how, what the motivation is that one needs to cultivate, how to do so, and then the trainings. What the practitioner is doing here is also developing a great strength of mind and a focus. And this is then developed ever further in the abandonment of the second clinging. So there's this progression. And as one is going through the meditations to cultivate the appropriate motivation and thereby able later to engage in actual trainings related to the abandonment of the second clinging, one is developing one's focus and broadness of mind ever further. And now when we come to the abandonment of the third clinging, if you cling to self-interest, you're not a bodhisattva. Then the basis that is being formed sequentially as one progresses through the preceding stages, now the practitioner has given rise to a mind of exceptional power and strength and focus, a mind that is not distracted by worldly concerns or even the slightest of desires relating to cyclic existence itself. Here now, the practitioner has given rise to a very powerful motivation, a very powerful focused mind. And this now then is developed into a new direction. Here what needs to be abandoned is clinging to self-interest or to self-obsession. And how this is usually expressed is the self-cherishing mind. It is this now in the third clinging that needs to be abandoned. The self-cherishing mind is the mind that cherishes oneself first and foremost. It's this attitude that places our own interest, our own welfare, first and foremost. And this has to be abandoned in order to become a bodhisattva. So those who have the aspiration to enter the path of the bodhisattvas, to be counted amongst the children of the Buddha, have to abandon the self-cherishing mind. And the way to do so is to cultivate the other cherishing mind. So the motivation to generate is that comes with bodhicitta. The way to achieve this is through cultivating the other cherishing mind. Here the training then to cultivate this other cherishing mind is, as we looked at in the previous weekend together, one reflects on the intimate relationship that we have with all sentient beings, this relationship of mother and child, and that this relationship has been formed over a beginningless lifetimes. And coming to see this close connection that we share with all beings, one then reflects on the kindness that they have shown us, whether directly in such a relationship or another relationship, as well as in indirect ways, lifetime after lifetime. Now one comes to, having come to see just how kind others are to one, and not just some beings but all, have shown us repeatedly such kindness and care. Naturally, in dependence on that meditation, the wish to repay their kindness will come. The stronger those preceding steps, the stronger this mind of wishing to repay their kindness will come. So we should be seeing a progression of dependency from the first overcoming the first clinging to the second and now to the third, that these are related. There's a sequence. And now the mind is very, very powerful, and one is committed to repaying the kindness of others and thinking how to do so. One engages in the practice, as we heard last time, on cultivating love and compassion together, as well as the altruistic attitude of universal responsibility. These three can be cultivated together, as we saw last time. And these in the meditation then, when one is engaging in the practice of taking on the suffering of others, giving of roots of virtue to them, because it is our responsibility, our personal responsibility to achieve the welfare of others. In this way, one practices these three steps together, culminating in the thought, for me to really be able to do this skillfully, not just as a mere aspiration, I need to become the most skilled of guides so that I can lead beings in the cultivation of their own minds, cultivation of the good qualities that lead to enlightenment and elimination of all the faults that are preventing that. I must become a Buddha for the sake of others. And in this way, one cultivates the required motivation for the third step, the motivation of bodhicitta. And then one is ready to actually engage in the trainings of a bodhisattva, the six perfections, which are the same six trainings as in the previous step, that of generosity, ethics, patience, joyous perseverance, concentration, and wisdom. But being conjoined with bodhicitta now, they are perfections. So this is the motivation that needs to be required for the third abandonment of the third clinging, how to cultivate it, and then the trainings of the bodhisattva. That presents the review of what we've been looking at over the last nine classes, I think. Now we come to the abandonment of the fourth clinging. If grasping arises, is not the view. So what this refers to is true grasping, where one grasps at phenomena existing truly or existing inherently. This is what has to be abandoned. If one does not abandon it, one's heartfelt aspiration cannot be achieved. So again, here we bear in mind the sequence of trainings that the yogi has practiced up to this point. They've given rise to this determination to become a Buddha for the sake of others. They've generated this mind of bodhicitta. They are committed to striving to become a Buddha. In order to do so, they have to abandon true grasping. They have to abandon the grasping at phenomena as existing truly or existing inherently. Without abandoning grasping at inherent existence together with its seeds and its imprints, Buddhahood cannot be attained. So this brings us now to the fourth clinging, which is to abandon true grasping in order to achieve the perfected state of Buddhahood.
Yeah.
chepa minise di ko shen du ma de lamrim chepa ne ki bu chung lam ji ba tu mo lam ji ba de shi go re de ne kham sum la shen na ngi ju minise du di ka su ka re shi go re ne ma ju gi ki bu ding ki lam ji ba nam sha shi go re da da de la shen na cha sin min an jin ba chu na ta wa minise di she di di ni bo di gi shen ba ni di gi kya ba chin ba lam ji ba nam sha shi go re zina lamrim je ba ina ki bu sum ji lam ji ba nam ji go shi go re
What should be very clear then in this root verse is that this presentation of the four clingings to be parted from is in accordance with what we're very used to in our Lamrim presentation, which is divided in three ways. I'm not saying it nicely. It's divided according to the capacity of various spiritual aspirants. So what we see in the first line here. Where in order to become an actual Dharma practitioner, one has to abandon clinging to this mere life, the pleasures and sufferings of this life. One engages in a variety of trainings, and those are the trainings that we see in the Lamrim presented as the trainings that are in accordance with or shared with a spiritual aspirant of initial capacity. Then in the second line, we come to the trainings that are in accordance with a spiritual aspirant of intermediate capacity, and these are the trainings in order to attain liberation from suffering in its entirety to achieve nirvana. And then the trainings that are unique to a being of supreme capacity, these are presented in the abandonment of the third and fourth clinging, that of self-interest and grasping to true existence. So therefore, this one verse contains in a very abbreviated form all the trainings that are common to the beings of initial and intermediate capacity, or shared with the beings of initial and intermediate capacity, as well as those of a being of supreme capacity.
Kyuna semja tam je jiba bacha da je ba na sanje ko ba to yage ni do na lo songsha ba ji re de ni ge jang ju sem bi ge nyam len je ma thu gen de de ni ge lo wong bo de jo wa zu ya ne ko ye du ma ta da le je tar ba se to yage ni nyam len je da ko songsha ge re na de ni de la de zam ya ta ba ya don din ye je lo nyam len je ma thu zu la 제와치만 Timbachuna, Tawa Min said, Deniki Tiji, she didn't answer Lul Pass in Juicy, and Yogi Yogi Titonda, some Tambana, and the Lemrim Chazan Yamnechi, Jagi, some Dana de Ligore, and Sanji Yusuagi Che, Sonji Buche, Chazangi, Ganesuvi, and Yamin Dinale, Madubaje or Marwa. Then Gabach and a bear, Sanji Suagi Che, Mombo Giti, she don't push you, which you are some more. That's not Juicy. Lemrim na jiru lemrim chenpo na ta lemrim chime nyamlen jidan je su nyu du ban lemrim ding dina du ban na ane ka so re lemrim chumu na jiru ro ta dina su du je shen ba shi de ge six ya six shi na la jiru ro da
this one root verse then the entire lemrim tradition is condensed to these mere four lines. If you think then actually about the entire Buddha Dharma, everything that the Buddha taught, he taught so as to lead beings to enlightenment. He taught in order to enable beings to achieve as quickly as possible the faultless, perfected state that he himself had achieved. From his experience, he taught the complete path perfectly. And he taught this so as to give beings the ability to completely eliminate all their afflictive minds together with their seeds and imprints and thereby attain the state of perfection, the state of Buddhahood. And these are the trainings that we associate with a being of greatest capacity. For those who haven't yet given rise to a strength of mind where they are committed to becoming a bodhisattva, and once a bodhisattva, becoming a Buddha for the sake of others, he taught them how they could attain liberation from suffering, how they could bring all the pain and suffering, even the subtlest, to a complete end. And thereby he taught the trainings that are shared with a being of intermediate capacity. And for those for whom such trainings are too daunting, he also, with his great skill, taught beings how they can achieve a good rebirth in their future lives, transform their way of thinking away from the distractions and mundane affairs of this mere life, and strive wholeheartedly to ensure that they don't fall into the suffering lower realms. And thereby, he taught the trainings that are shared with a being of initial capacity. So this way of dividing the Buddha Dharma contains the entirety of the Buddha's teachings. It's all condensed into these trainings in accordance with the spiritual aspirants of initial, intermediate, and supreme capacity. So someone who understands this roadmap, understands these various trainings, they can learn and memorize this mere four-line verse, having memorized it and understanding the lamrim outlines and some detail on it. By reciting this four-line verse, they have a basis to engage in lamrim meditation wherever they are, whenever they wish. And this is important to be clear on, because up here we see the vast array of the Buddha's teachings, many texts. We know them mostly through their condensed forms into great texts such as the Lamrim Chemo, or it's the Great Lamrim, or the Middling Lamrim, or the Shortest Lamrim. But we find the same meaning presented in this one four-line verse. So therefore, one can take all one's studies on the Lamrim, and through memorizing this one verse, use that as a basis of reflection. Now we turn to some new words. We come to the 25th verse. And again, I'll just read the first two lines. So just to repeat, the Tibetan, it's all just one line after the other. It's not broken into numbered verses like we have. In whatever way you abide in reality, there is no release so long as you grasp. In our previous weekend together, when we were looking at how to part from the third clinging, we looked at the cultivation of love and compassion to the point where it's so powerful that bodhicitta actually arises in the continuum of the practitioner, thereby make the practitioner qualified to engage in the actual six perfections. Here, though, the point that is being emphasized in these two lines in brief is that if, no matter how much one meditates on love and compassion and bodhicitta and engages in the first five of the perfections, those of generosity, ethical conduct, patience, joy, perseverance, and concentration, no matter how well one has trained in these, and no matter how powerful they are within one's continuum, without them being conjoined with the wisdom realizing emptiness, Buddhahood cannot be attained.
Mm-hmm. solam chungun le ya dhwa ya ma da solam chungun ra cha jiwa tong yin ma to bai na solam jing cha tu gu ma lwa chi zhen zhen shi senpa solam jing cha tu ya ma solam chungun jia cha tu chi zhen dini yin da solam sanje gu wang to wa la solam jing jua lam tong lam guan la rinpa xin de nyam jen ya dhwa gu lwa chi zhen tong yin ma to bai na ane solam chungun sam ma to di le ya dhwa tu gu ma chi zhen dini yin da zhen shi sen nyam jen jia bai na tong yin ma to na sanje gu wang to tu mi lwa
The practitioner, no matter how hard they and effectively and skillfully they train in the cultivation of bodhicitta and those first five perfections of ethical conduct, generosity, patience, joy, perseverance and concentration, they will attain bodhicitta and therefore attain a path of a bodhisattva, the path of accumulation. And this path of accumulation is divided into three parts or three levels, of which the first of the three is the small level or small part of the path of accumulation. That is what is achieved when one becomes a bodhisattva and generates uncontrived bodhicitta. But without having realized emptiness, the bodhisattva will not be able to progress past the very first of the three levels of the first of the five paths. They will not even be able to achieve the middling level of the path of accumulation without the wisdom realizing emptiness.
Di ma je da ng zo dong yi ma to ba yin na ka san san ji go ba to ba la nyom mo ba pang go la nyom mo ba ma ba na na san ji go ba to tu go ba nyom mo ba pa de nyom mo ba cha san gi gyu tsa wi gyu di ka san chu sa ta wa di den ji ma ri pa se cha go la cha san den ji ma ri pa de pang go la den ji ma ri pa de pang ba la den ji den ba zu ba de den ji ji gi xin yu me ba to che dong ba ni to 동반이 또네 뒤로 두고 발했더니 된지를 빵고 그래 마도 니 된지 동반이 마도 봐네 된지 빠투고 말해 된지 마빠나 된지니 바차 빠투고 말해 진짜 진짜 상지 고방 토발라 된지니다 된지에 싸보나 바차다 제가 빵고 그러고 빵고 엔자 동이 마도만 된지 빠투고 말해 된지 바차 빠투고 말해 되니 엔자 인지 민지 장주심 가지고 좀 또 도마 된자 고 인지 민지 상지 고방 토발라 동반이 마도 발라 타비오 말해 시골데
The reason why the wisdom realizing emptiness is indispensable for the attainment of Buddhahood is that in order to become a being that is perfected, one needs to not only develop all good qualities to the state of perfection, but one also has to, alongside that, completely eliminate all faults so that not even a trace is left. And the faults on the on one's continuum are the afflicted minds. So it's the afflicted minds that need to be abandoned, together with their seeds, but not only their seeds, their imprints as well, so that there's no trace of them left at all. It's only then that one can become a Buddha. So all good qualities developed, and even the slightest trace of a fault eliminated. The root cause of all our afflictions is this ignorance of self-grasping. So this has to be abandoned, and can only be abandoned through the cultivation of its antidote, the directly contrary mind of wisdom, in particular the wisdom realizing the emptiness of inherent existence. That is the antidote. The opposite mind to the ignorance of grasping at phenomena as existing inherently is the wisdom that realizes phenomena are empty of existing inherently. That is the only antidote. The direct antidote, and that needs to be developed to the strength that it not only destroys the affliction together with their seeds, but also their imprints. And that is essential for the attainment of Buddhahood. Buddhahood cannot be achieved without wisdom of that magnitude. It's also important to be clear that, as has been said, the wisdom realizing emptiness is indispensable for the attainment of Buddhahood, but not only Buddhahood. to attain liberation from a cyclic existence, to bring a complete end to suffering, one also requires the wisdom realizing emptiness. Without the wisdom realizing emptiness, one cannot become an arhat or a foe destroyer, let alone a Buddha. So therefore, the wisdom realizing emptiness is indispensable for either of these supreme goals, that of becoming an arhat or becoming a Buddha. In the root line that we look at, if grasping arises, it's not the view. So grasping here refers to grasping at true existence or grasping at inherent existence. So the antidote that needs to be developed has to be the direct antidote. The antidote needs to be realized directly. This can be understood, for example, if one is trying to catch a thief. One needs to know directly or explicitly who that thief is. If one just has a rough idea, a general idea, that's not enough. We'll just know it's one of these people. That's not enough to apprehend the thief. So here one needs to know explicitly, directly, the antidote in order to be able to eliminate the grasping. Our root text just mentions the word grasping. This then can be expressed in differing ways. Some texts use the term grasping at true existence. Some texts use the term grasping at inherent existence. Other texts use the term grasping at its own defining characteristics. So these terms we should understand here as being synonymous, and can relate, can utilize any of these terms. So bearing in mind that we're utilizing true existence, inherent existence, or established by way of its own defining characteristics synonymously, what that's referring to here is something that exists. If it were to exist inherently, it would not require imputation by mind. So if something were to exist inherently, it would not require imputation by mind.
Okay.
Dini di rangsin drupa kari de, di goso? Dini di gacha de?
Jizan gacha. Manzo gacha, sikurwa de la gacha la gapa, longa la gacha de kari lamna, gacha sikurwa. Manzo lo la kari nangu sene, lo la yu kari naba yine, lo pa taba mayinpa kurang wene yoba nangu lwa. Dina tu lo la ya gacha kore. Jizan dini gacha ya gacha la kore. Di gacha de la gacha de kari lamna, ta lo pa shaba mayinpa,
So here in this practice, in this parting, this clinging to be parted from, what is the object to be refuted, the object of refutation? That is the appearance of an existence as being inherently existent. So this appearance of inherent existence, that objects appearing to the mind as being existing inherently, in other words, not needing imputation by mind. This needs to be refuted. This is the object of refutation, this appearance of inherent existence.
This point
is presented about the object of refutation is it said that the object, the way it appears to the mind, is that it's not dependent on causes and conditions, not dependent on parts, etc., or and so forth. But to put this in its briefest form, as I've just done, it means that if an object appears to our mind as not requiring imputation by mind. It appears not to be dependent on imputation by mind. So that's the briefest way to put it. A text expresses it differently, but this is the easiest way to understand, well, there's the briefest abbreviated way to present it. This is how phenomena appear to us. They appear to us to be inherently existent. They appear as if they don't require imputation by mind. So this is how all phenomena appear to us. All phenomena appear to our mind as if they are inherently existent, meaning they appear as if they are not dependent on anything at all. In brief, they appear not dependent on imputation by mind. They don't require imputation by mind. This is how phenomena appear to us. And our mind of grasping grasps at this. We could say believes, that we express this as it believes that the phenomenon exists in this way, so grasps at it as this being how the phenomenon exists. So this is how all phenomena appear to us. We grasp at it, and this is the mind of true grasping. So the phenomenon appears as truly existent or inherently existent. Grasping at it is the mind of true grasping. And this then refers to in the verse, the in the fourth line we have, if grasping arises, it is not the view. If one has true grasping, that is not the view. It's true grasping that needs to be abandoned. So again, the fourth line in the root verse, if grasping arises, it is not the view. If true grasping arises, one hasn't cultivated the correct view or realized the correct view. So coming to see this, this mistaken, this wrong mind needs to be abandoned, and it's abandoned through the process of investigation or analysis. Like was mentioned earlier, one needs to know directly who the thief is before one can apprehend and expel the thief. So that is done through a process of investigation. And this too is what is needed here in our quest to understand reality.
As
was mentioned, all phenomena appear to our mind as being inherently existent. To see if they exist in this way, one goes to the process of investigation, as was just mentioned. So if all phenomena appear to be inherently existent, one can, in theory, start with any phenomenon to see how it appears. But the texts always recommend that one starts with oneself, with this, with our own sense of self, as this is an object we are most familiar with, and it's said to be more difficult to start with any other object. So we start with our own sense of self to try and get a sense of how our self appears to our mind. So when we think, I'm sitting here, I'm listening to this teaching, I'm a little hungry, I'm a little tired, there's this, always this sense of self. What is that sense of self? Or rather, how does that sense of self appear to our mind? This is the starting point, is to come to see how the object, in this case, the self, appears to our mind. Starting then with our self, and trying to see how it appears to us. The characteristics of a phenomenon being inherently existent is that, as we've heard, it appears to be independent of anything at all, meaning independence of imputation by mind, and it's something that appears to be unchanging. So when we've accomplished this first step to whatever degree, when we have a feeling for, we have a sense how our self appears to us, then we start our investigation, and we first see, does our self change momentarily? It appears to be unchanging. Is this the case? Or does it change momentarily?
Kijing amala tuh gemeh, meh bayi na, ngah tu naya lah, di nanah di tempat juga nanah di sini. Kasi kijing amala macam apa tu, nanggur eh. Jadi nanggur kijing amala tuh gemeh na, ngah amala kiau arwah. Jadi nanggur ngah cium cium madu yomar. Jadi cer 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 dia ni. Jadi ngah amal tuh, ngah amal di meh na, ane ngah dilihat yomar arwah. Jadi ngah di kijing amala macam apa tu, jadi minus. Jadi ane ngah di kijing amala tuh gemeh tuh gemar lah na, kijing cima di lama tuh na, kok kijing cima doya meh na, ane ngah.
We've started analysis and starting analysis follows having seen how the object of the self appears. Now we investigate, and we investigate first through seeing if our sense of self changes momentarily. We can think, we first start to think in quite a coarse or rough way, and we probably will all readily acknowledge that our sense of self has changed a lot over our lifetime. From when our earliest memories, maybe we were toddlers or young children, then over the intervening years to our present state right now, our sense of self has certainly changed. We no longer identify in the same way as we used to. So we immediately can see that there is momentary change. So the one characteristic of inherently existent phenomenon, that it is unchanging, immediately we see a flaw here. It is changing. The sense of self has changed countless times. And then in relation to the second characteristic of an inherently existent phenomenon, that being it being independent of anything at all, such as imputation by mind, each subsequent moment is dependent on the preceding moment. It's a relationship, there's a continuity. It's not independent. A moment is not independent on its own, but it comes about independence in relation to the previous moment. So thinking then about our own lives here, we can see our sense of self has changed. Therefore, it cannot be inherently existent because it's not unchanging and it's not independent because each moment, one after the other, is interdependent. And moreover, we can then take the reflection a little more deeply and think of the consequence of a phenomenon being inherently existent, meaning unchanging, independent. It would mean that our self, if it were unchanging, we wouldn't have better days and worse days because we'd be unchanging. Moreover, in terms of being freed from suffering, there would be no hope. There would be no point engaging in practice and training our minds because we would be unchanging. Change could not come if we were unchanging. Change couldn't be impacted, our self couldn't be impacted independent on causes because our self, if it were inherently existent, would be independent and therefore any training would have no impact on it. So again, we see the self cannot be inherently existent.
Mm-hmm. 叫给金阿妈的起码来接吧，接呢，对那个年没对。但是呢，给金阿妈的阿妈阿妈的对过来，给金阿妈的起码来对过来，起码的也阿妈的对过来吧。其实给金阿是这边呢，这对的话嘛，都嘛对吧，没对个其实。现在在哪样的了？刚来嘛对吧，哪对了？现在你的接吧接的。通过嘛了哇，就像那个电视剧《南下三大》是电视剧的，现在给金阿妈的起码了，给起码的阿妈的电视记录度，就像给起起码的呀，阿妈的面呢起码用啊用嘛嘞，起码的面呢阿妈用啊嘛，就是你是给金阿是这个积极的对对个成果，俺了呀，那对俺的刚来嘛对吧，然后嘛对吧，有对吧，那个的人也通过蛮多，就像给金阿是这边的，给金阿是俺是这边的，加上。积极的对对吧？才加呀，才都提升了这个民族。但哪哇哪些，给现在就哪了年没都什么带的哇
？Those of you who attended the extensive teachings on the text "A Praise for Dependent Arising" and have engaged in these meditations will be very familiar to this with this process, because in the analysis to where we come to see where we investigate whether a phenomenon exists in the way that it appears to our mind or not. Here we're using the investigation to see whether it is unchanging independence through looking whether it changes momentarily. And we see that there are moments to our sense of self. There is this change. So here the technique we used in the presentation on dependent arising we use here, that each moment is dependent on the preceding moment. The present moment comes about independence on a preceding moment. The future moment, the moments that are still to come, they are dependent on the current moments, which are dependent on the past moments. There is the sequence of dependency. So therefore, the self cannot be either independent or unchanging.
That is why, when we talk about the people who are in the world, we are in the world.而是那样对落来那样那些，他刚来呀，嘛对落来呀，嘛对吧？就像刚来嘛对吧？人工的，越把什么的那样那些的，俺是分配点都高度嘛，接吧接吧呢？当然，过当、喇叭当、钢板的这些呢，这边是呢，你买的，这是干啥呢？你，这是你我这一点先起来点点吧，变成喇叭罗去，变成钢板车，没办法，总是有些变成俺那样的，其他的喇叭的俺吃的蛮多。那人家过的几个安排的，你都现在接吧接吧，那但南给下当茶当爸爸的，如果刚给点那样，马上说那就给俺的年没这个，这里再没听起来。现在人家都什么的，现在人家给俺这个初步的给车上积极的点的对点的解决吧，就鱼塘点的对吧？过鱼窝这也听起来像，现在隔壁的干部车，隔壁的这个。你苏布养过菜呀？当干不了苏布了，那做啥？就玩这样。干不了呀，就苏布给吃些面吧，水果啊，等用过了吧？这因为这等于是说是俺的那娃哪些的，但苏布点的看见那娃哪些原来有几年作业没得，可能大量是有的吧？孤独，其实第一人民都其实蓬勃的了，有作业嘛？我其实也蓬勃的吃些，干那些苏给蓬勃吃些，刚做什么大白呢？俺的也没弄什么的，等那个心就先进去了吧。
Take the analysis then further to look at. So we want to see if the self exists in the way that it appears. We're looking for this unchanging, independent self. So we look within our aggregates, our physical and mental aggregates, to see if we can find the self anywhere here. So we start with the physical aggregates, this body that we identify with, so. And we think, so which of these body parts is myself to be found, this independent, unchanging self? And we break our body parts up into various components, and we mentally put perhaps an arm over there, a leg over there, and we think that my arm over there is that myself. Has my sense of self now gone to where my arm is, and this is now just the corpse? No, I'm here, the arm is over there, but my sense of self is not here. And we can go through all the body parts. Whatever it is that we identify with so in our body, we look and we look at subtler parts within, and nowhere can we find anything that we can point to and say, that is indistinguishable from my sense of self. That is my independent, unchanging self. And we come to see that this body It's not the self.
So what did you do? Chima,
Having sought ourself within our physical aggregates and not having found it, the only other place to look is within our mental aggregates. And here we can and should analyze in a variety of ways. So we have many different minds, so let's take those of feeling. Sometimes a happy feeling arises, other times suffering feeling arises, other times neutral feelings. So immediately, just from that presentation, we can see none of these minds, a happy mind, a suffering mind, a neutral mind, can be my sense of self. Because these change. They're not unchanging. Moreover, they change independent on causes and conditions. So therefore, they are dependent. They're not independent. So therefore, our sense of self, the self that appears to be unchanging and independent, in other words, inherently existent, isn't to be found in any of these individual minds, such as happy feeling, suffering feeling, or neutral feeling. Doesn't exist in the way that it appears. But to gain ever more certainty of this, it's imperative then we search further through other minds, coming to see whether any of them is our sense of self, our I. And what about the subtler minds, the very subtle minds? Even those consciousnesses, they too change momentarily. There's none that can be found that is unchanging and independent. Because just like in a segment previous to this, we spoke about momentary change. Here, all our consciousnesses, including the subtlest ones, change moment by moment by moment. Therefore, they are not unchanging. And each moment is dependent on the preceding moment. So there's a relationship of dependency. And the future moments are to come is dependent on the present moment and the moments previous to that. So therefore, even the subtlest consciousnesses, these two are dependent. These two are changing. Here now in our meditation, we've investigated everywhere that the self could possibly be, and we find nothing. We don't find this unchanging, independent self at all. The self is empty of being unchanging. It's empty of being independent. It's empty of being inherently existent. This is when we realize emptiness of inherent existence. We've investigated. We couldn't find what we're looking for. We've come to realize the self does not exist in the way that it appears. It is empty of existing in the way that it appears. In this way, one realizes emptiness. This meditation is imperative. One engages in repeatedly over a sustained period, because the outcome is that one comes to realize that the self, whatever phenomenon one is investigating, does not exist in the way that it appears. It is empty of existing in the way that it appears. It's empty of inherent existence. And this is the cultivation of the wisdom that is realizing emptiness. And the stronger this wisdom is, the weaker the contrary mind becomes, the ignorance of self-grasping. And therefore, it's imperative that one engages in this meditation repeatedly over a sustained period. The final step in the meditation, then, when one has come to realize the self is empty of inherent existence, is that one pulls oneself back from the thought that this I does not exist at all, and realizes the I does exist, but how so? It doesn't exist in the way that it appears, because I've looked for it, and it's empty of existing in the way that it appears. But there is still a sense of self, and that sense of self is merely imputed by mind onto the aggregates. So therefore the self exists, but is not inherently existent. The self is an existent but not inherently existent. How does it then exist? As a mere imputation by mind onto the collection of the aggregates. And this is the I, or the self, that cultivates the various paths that progresses towards liberation and enlightenment. The self that is a mere imputation by mind, that exists merely as an imputation by mind.
Pumbo di, Sui Pumbo di, Supon di Pai, Yeti Gamma Risha, and 那你就要来个话，那你就要了。但是俺祖父婆要做错事呢，俺爷拉就要来个。就是俺祖父婆的干的事呢，祖父婆的大事呢，哎，俺弟弟就要来个了。就是，那俺这个的，属于父母的，属于父母的，哦，爹爹，靠爹爹下来个了。属于父母，俺的我那是，俺的没通过嘛，俺创业这个属于父母通过了，属于父母创的呢。 我靠爹爹了，我说，所以婆婆的嘛，年纪属于顾家长的人，我靠爹爹下来过，就是俺就来通过他了吧，靠读现在，就是俺是从来这个通过通过的，现在通过通过靠爹读了过了吧，就是刚才通过了把带过了，就是但俺这个，哎呀，错话电话修起，错话电话怎样的，错话电话怎样样的，那俺还记不住那个了，错话电话的了，俺是俺是怕错话电话的带过来的。
俺记不住了，第二个说错话电话都是带过来的。但俺都属于风波的，估计俺爹爹讲爹爹想俺爹爹个些的属于风波的带过来。当俺错话电话的，错话的给就电话里头，俺爹夫都那个都错了怕带过来。错话电话里头，俺干啊都那个都，俺呢错话电话是怕带过来。现在来怕大些嘛，电视是大些嘛，电视是当年错话电话是怕大些呢，俺些的给你爹都原来给。
叫我几个月把这地嘛都先得了嘛，到我去老师要买嘞。哎，你们就记住现在他话，你们那民区啊那些，去不多的拿不去那，去拿不多了是吧？去不多的搞不去那，没搞不去不多搞不通，去搞不多了我。现在民团得了，不多搞不多的嘛通过嘛，你呢怕点了呀，来带过了哇，那个气势带过了哇。
The process of invitation is something that we do continuously. So just to give some illustrations that are easy to understand so that you can be aware of us in your everyday life. Tonight when you go home and you're tired, you lie down in bed, you say, oh, I am lying down in bed. So what is this I lying down in bed? Well, you're merely imputing the I on your physical aggregate, which is now flat on the bed. In the morning, the alarm goes off, when groggily sits up, oh, now I'm up. And what we're doing then is we're imputing the sense of I onto our form aggregate, our body, which is now standing up. And when we're happy and we're in a good mood, oh, I'm having a great day. I, the sense of I, is imputed onto this feeling of happiness. And if you're having a bad day, exactly the same. Oh, everything's terrible. We're imputing the sense of I onto the feeling of suffering. So this is just how we impute. And we don't just do it with ourselves, but with all our objects. We go home and we see our pets. Let's say we see our dog, and if the dog is black, we say, oh, there's my dog, and it's black. And we only say, our dog is only called a black dog because of the color of its fur and that it's a dog, and therefore we impute black dog onto it. So we impute onto the object. And if the dog just happens to be the color white, have white fur, we would impute white dog onto that animal. And then we use this imputation continuously.
其实呢，几个部的车上搞活动，去拿过那个部的车上，没把说咱们庄稼收了呢，地基搞活动，几个人来了呢，几部没几的人下来呢，去拿过来来个嘛，几搞活动。
If you take your dog for grooming, and I don't know, the pet beautician gets carried away and returns your dog completely shaven, you're going to probably say, what happened to my beautiful white dog or my beautiful black dog? It's now bald. It no longer serves to be called a white dog or a black dog because it's a bald dog.
And that during the 다와디 검제는 자신 유군이 아니라 다와디 마곰바 있나 뉴모 파토고마 대인장에디 돈이 또에게 돈달이야 네 돈이 제바치기 인생에 삼로치 디 돈다 인생장 제바치에 제바치 지긴 삼베 군와치 다 제바치라데랑 아주 다 소소야도 스테이지 내가 세티 롤이야 간신난구도 제서 나와나 나요도 강라야 뭐도 랑은 뭐니 주바 나디 다 라지 주바 나타 디레스 다 디니기 Lui Pa Xia Pa La Ma Tu Kurung Wei Ni Yue Ba Ti La Ran Xin Chu Ba Yue Ran Xin Chu Ba La Guo De. Jie Zhen Jin Ni Xi Luo La Neng Yu Du. Ti Na Wang Na Xin Ta Gan Xi Du Se Di Xin A Tu Xie Ba Na Xin Jin Du Xin Na Sam La Da Di Ta Dong Yi La Jie Ba Jie Ba Se Che Ge Luo Du Xin Na Ga Zu Ge Sam La De Yang De Yang Du Dang Ba Na Da Ku Du Deng Yi Deng Yi Deng Yu Zhen Sam Deng Yi Deng Yi Jie Ba Yi Na Yang Chi Ge Luo Pa Sab 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 Zhu Gu Ru Wa An Du Du Xin Na Ga Zu Di Ling De Ne Xie San Yin A Di Ma Xin Mo Di Xue Xie.
This is in conclusion then tonight. I'm not going to recap what we've been looking at, but in brief, to say that the motivation to come to this class and to have again from tomorrow is that in order to be of greatest benefit to others, it's imperative we cultivate good qualities within us so that we can eventually achieve enlightenment. And to make this a reality, to become a Buddha for the sake of others, one has to cultivate love and compassion and many other qualities, but the wisdom realizing emptiness, this too is indispensable. In order to actualize any aspiration that we have to become a Buddha, one has to cultivate this wisdom realizing emptiness. And therefore, we need to receive these teachings and reflect on them. And if I can request those who want some homework, take some homework away with you when you're walking out of here and driving home. Just think, how does the self appear to my mind? What are the characteristics that it's supposed to have? So I've heard it, all phenomena appear inherently. So what does this mean? And we heard tonight that it means it's unchanging and it's independent. So look, so I get a feeling for how, if you can see how the self appears to us in such a way. And then investigate, look for it, try and find it in the way that was described earlier. And if one does this repeatedly over a sustained period, one will very quickly move through the meditation as described today, but then going down to subtler and subtler levels, gaining ever finer understanding of how the self appears and still not being able to find it. Thank you very much. Our time is well and truly up. Thank you.